John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning on this. Now starting to look like fall with a little bit of chill in the air, clouds out there, not raining, which of course I don't think it's going to rain, but nevertheless, you could see that you're heading into the fall part of the year. I mean, summer has been great, one of the better ones you can have, but you can see eventually there's going to be that other bad part that'll come in, all those clouds and all that crazy stuff. Hey, we got lots going on here. We got the five biggest stories of the day, and the top five are brought to you by Eastside Plumbing.
Number one.
An update on Justin Britt, if at all?
Yeah, he's got a sore shoulder. He's going to go day-to-day, see if he can play on the weekend. We'll find out.
Bobby and KJ practicing today?
Bobby's practicing. KJ's not.
What's his status?
He had a good weekend. He's real positive about it, but there's nothing to say about when he's returning at this point. He's looking at it every day, trying to get well.
So those are some of the injury reports that are out there. And, of course, Seahawks do have some issues right now on those injury reports because it's a respectable list. And I guess the big concern right now is on the offensive line. Now, you have Russell Wilson out there with a hamstring injury. And, you know, that's one that's not too bad just from the standpoint that he had a full practice. One concerning added to this is Ethan Posick. He didn't practice because of an ankle injury. And that's important if Justin Britt. And, you know, the rumbling is that he may not be able to go. But, again, we won't know that with the shoulder injury till later in the week because Posick might just drop in as a center. Yeah, Joey Hunt can be in there as the center, but that'll be a big blow if Posick and Britt are going to be out. That's two starters. And so, again, day-to-day according to Pete Carroll, and that's one of the things. At least on the positive side, Bobby Wagner practice full, Trey Flowers practice full, Delano Hill practice full, and DJ Fluker practice full. So it looks like he's through his hamstring injuries. Not practicing was KJ Wright. KJ, of course, still has that knee injury, but it does look like Michael Kendricks can fill the void there and play, at least buying another week for KJ, but still, he hasn't been ruled out yet. Hey, by the way, you can head to 710sports.com/win and enter the code word block. Code word is block. By the end of the hour, to be entered in to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the Dallas Cowboys for their home opener this Sunday at CenturyLink Field. Limited single ticket games and tickets remain, and of course, the Seahawks on the 2018 season, and you can get those tickets at Seahawks.com/tickets. Remember, this code word will expire at 11 a.m. At 11 a.m., so you got to the top of the hour to do this. Keep listening to better your odds of winning. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win.
Number two.
I can't believe I'm saying it. It makes me sick to my stomach to have to say it. I almost want to throw up. But the bottom line is the Dallas Cowboys defense appears to be something to be reckoned with. And that is what I take away from this performance Sunday night. It's not about Dak Prescott. It wasn't about Ezekiel Elliott. It wasn't about Cole Beasley or Terrence Williams or anybody like that. It was about that Dallas defense being able to apply pressure and neutralize an opposing offense and an opposing running game overall as well.
So that's Stephen A. Smith, and I don't know, is he overreacting to a game against a Giants offense that's terrible? I mean, because, yeah, the defense did look good, and I think that you can see that it's a young defense because, you know, they've chased away a lot of the high-paid veterans. I mean, it's a good group right now as far as draft choices. Very young in the secondary, mostly second-year guys out there. And, of course, Chris Richard is the defensive coordinator. And so be interesting to see because Richard was, you know, here, did such a good job, and then's out trying to help out in the secondary and get that defense and trying to get the secondary to kind of match that Rod Marinelli pass rush. But there are some, they do get some pressures, and of course, it's going against a Giants defensive line that right now is not very good at all. And they blitzed a little bit more, which is kind of unusual for a Rod Marinelli defense. Still, Cowboys ranked third in points allowed at 14.5. They're fourth in yards per game at 274, and of course, they've got nine sacks, which is second most in the league. So Chris Richard coming into town, that's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, what I'm going to be interested to see is, you know, how much man do they play, how much zone, because again, remember, Rod Marinelli is a two-deep zone guy, so trying to watch that. But Stephen A. kind of embracing the Cowboys defense, I still have to kind of wait and see. At this moment, I don't think the defense is going to be good as, say, the Chicago Bear defense that the Seahawks faced, and maybe not as good as Denver. Still, it's not going to be a bad defense that the Seahawks are going to face on Sunday.
Number three.
Well, I think it's going to be electric. When I look at UW, I still think that they are a tad higher than every other team when you look at consistent performance through the first 3 weeks of the season. And a huge reason is Miles Gaskin. 30 carries a week ago against UW. I think they feed him again. Where Arizona State has struggled has been in the perimeter run game. So is it Miles Gaskin on angle routes? Is it outside zone? Is it toss sweeps? Getting him on the perimeter is something that I believe UW will do in this ball game.
So the Huskies, believe it or not, established as 19-point favorites. And that's Yogi Roth talking about what to expect from the Huskies, who are 10th ranked. And they go against Arizona State, a team that, it's going to be 7:30 at Husky Stadium. Herm Edwards has done a pretty good job with the defense, giving up just 16 points a game so far. And they have two freshmen, a true freshman linebacker out there who was named the National Defensive Player of the Week after just his second college game. But what Yogi Roth says right now is that that's a problem as far as being able to stop the perimeter running. That's why Miles Gaskin can probably have a pretty good game. And there's certainly, I know we talked about it yesterday with Jake Heaps, there's more pressure on Jake Browning to get rid of the ball quicker, take a sap, or just try sack a sack, or try to extend a play. But at the same moment, there's too many plays that are out there, and so they need to score a touchdown and all that. I think Browning is taking some unfair criticism, but again, he needs to play better, particularly in the bigger games. And this is one where this should be a good win, but again, like anything else, you got to go out there and try to win.
Number four.
The 3-2. Swing, and this is rifled high. Sailing towards the pole in left field. This dunks in there and gone. Mitch Haniger going deep again, his 26th of the season. And the Mariners just continue to pile on here in Houston. And the birthplace of Mitch Haniger at the top of the order has treated him well once again. It's 7-0 Mariners.
And we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Mariners get a 9-0 win over Houston. And where that's significant is that they actually win the series against the Astros. They have 7 wins down in Houston, which, of course, that's something you didn't expect. And I guess from the big picture, that's encouraging because now it shows that, an Astro team's a beat up on the Mariners for about 2-3 years. Now you can at least play with them and have success and not have to be intimidated going down to Houston. Now, again, Houston did eliminate the Mariners from the division race on Tuesday, and with that victory, but now the Mariners get 2 out of 3 down in Houston and get the day off today. Home runs by Kyle Seager, Mitch Haniger, and Heredia, all solo home runs, and so that gives the Mariners right now an 84-68 record. Still 10 games remaining, and still doesn't look good as far as catching the A's. It's a 7-game gap right now. A's won last night, and I get the magic number down to about 3, so I would imagine before Monday it's going to be official that the Mariners will be eliminated from the wild card race. A's, in the meantime, only a couple games behind the Yankees, trying to catch them, but the Yankees have won 2 straight games against Boston, trying to delay their celebration for winning the division. Still, the wild card race is around. Doesn't look good for the Mariners. A couple updates as far as that goes. In the game last night, Matt Festa came out, and it was a bullpen type of game, and he had 1 scoreless innings, and Casey Lawrence, who came in, he gets the win. Warren Armstrong, Duke Grimm, and Elias gets the, coming in there and doing the good job in a 9-0 win. As far as James Paxton, he's still sidelined with pneumonia, trying to get through that, so he opted for a bullpen game, so no Paxton yet, but I would imagine he's going to get a start here real soon. 10 games remain in the season, and that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number four.
With the Browns where they are, is it time to play Baker Mayfield?
I think it is, and I know a lot of people out there will say, well, Terod has not played horribly.
Yeah.
And he hasn't. He made some big plays last week, but he's completing 53% of his throws. He's thrown 2 interceptions in 2 games, and they're averaging under 20 points per game in the first 2 games. So are you going to get much worse play from Baker Mayfield is my question. And now you can start the train moving with his career and get him on the field. And, they're not going to win a championship this year. They're not going to win anything this year, no matter who's playing quarterback. So why not get him in there, get him reps? Like we see with Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold... There we go. My man.
Ryan.
Sam Darnold is taking some lumps and going through it, and he's learning. He's gaining experience. To me, why not play Baker?
Why not? Because they need to win a game. And to put the rookie quarterback in, I think it gives you less chance to win the game. And this is one where, I mean, I think it's unfair for Sam Darnold to have 3 games in 11 days. That's way too much to ask. And why rush Baker Mayfield? I mean, this is still a bad Browns team, but I think the Browns have a chance to win. And part of it is because Tyrod Taylor has, you know, experience at the quarterback position. And so the Jets are already 3-point favorites because, again, it is the Browns. And so I still think you don't rush Baker Mayfield. And remember, I mean, you got a coach in Hugh Jackson that can be in trouble. I mean, he could be losing his job if they continue to lose, and this is a winnable game for them. You're taking on a rookie quarterback. You got some things going, and again, you got a rookie quarterback that's had very little time to prepare because now he has to flip the switch on the Sunday game, which he lost in Miami, or against Miami, and now come back and try to win on a Thursday night with very little prep going against a good defense with the Cleveland Browns. Still think you stay with Taylor. Hey, you can listen to my show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, we're going to go under further review, and I want to talk about the defense because I've been impressed so far with Ken Norton Jr. and what he's been able to do and how he's been able to get such a young group on the field so quickly. We'll talk about that next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
So under further review, I think we're going to kind of review the defense, and now we're 2 games into the Ken Norton Jr. era. Now, of course, that era started when he came aboard and was teaching the linebackers, and basically, you know, he was so responsible for developing 3 Pro Bowl caliber linebackers. Bobby Wagner is now one of the best middle linebackers in the game. K.J. Wright, an exceptional outside linebacker, has been to the Pro Bowl, and Bruce Irvin, who he brought on in and who was so raw and made him a good linebacker slash defensive end. So now, of course, what he's trying to do, and I think it's kind of, I mean, you talk about a remarkable challenge. I mean, here he is. I mean, he's had so many first-time guys. I mean, so you take a look in the first couple games. Trey Flowers out there, fifth-round pick, rookie, 72 plays. He does a decent job. Then they have to come in with Shaquem Griffin. Now Griffin struggled. And, of course, wasting no time, you know, as the game was going on, and particularly with the height and the mile-high altitude and all that, he was able to come back and, you know, get Austin Colletro in there. And then now, in the next week, they find out that Bobby Wagner's not going to play. So now Colletro makes his first start at middle linebacker, has 8 tackles and does a good job. And then he takes Michael Kendricks because, you know, Kendricks comes in and he, with like a day or two of preparation, has a decent game as the weak side linebacker. And so he set things up so at least it's simple enough that you can make young guys come in or new guys come in and do a pretty good job. I'm impressed so far with Ken Norton Jr. And, of course, the one thing that if you get young guys out there, you are also trying to develop some depth on defense. Here's what he has to say.
Well, I didn't have to change anything. I think coming into it, one thing I wanted to do was to make sure we had depth. To have guys to develop young players behind the starters. So if anything were to happen, the guys have to take a water break or can't or got tired on one play, and the guy has to go in like Austin Colletro. He goes in and we don't lose much. So the main thing is to get depth and to grow and to develop younger players to step in when the veterans are out for any particular time.
Okay, so that's Ken Norton Jr. talking about the trying to develop some guys, and I think you can see now that this is going to be a work in progress because again there are so many young guys there. I mean, you think about it, you basically go from 8 Pro Bowl guys on defense on last year's team, 8 Pro Bowl starters, and now you're down in this game to basically 1 Earl Thomas. Now, of course, they'll get Bobby Wagner back this week. We'll see about K.J. Wright, but there was only like 3 starters that were really back. Now again, and you'd have Frank Clark moving up from a number 3 to a number 1. Technically, I guess half the season he was a number 2 because Cliff Avery was out with his injury on the neck. And then, of course, you've got Jaron Reed and all that. So I think he's doing a good job. But the one thing I think is so fascinating, and this goes back to, you know, the setup in Indianapolis with Tony Dungy. I remember when Bill Polian was looking for a coach to replace Jim Mora, he knew that the money was going to be on offense because he's got Peyton Manning, he's got offensive linemen to pay, and so what he wanted to try to do was set it up so that you have a defense, like a cover 2 defense that Tony Dungy would run, and you could take linebackers – draft them and put them out there immediately to start and have them play under their rookie contracts. And so, you know, what I don't think he anticipated, he could get Tony Dungy, because all of a sudden Tampa Bay lets Tony Dungy go. He goes to Indianapolis, and you see the great success it can have there. But, you know, Ken Norton Jr. has set this up so, one, you can take a young player and get him out there playing, or you can take a new player and get him out there fast. And that's one thing that he was able to do with Michael Kendricks, because here's Kendricks signing late in the week, getting on the team, and then trying to just, you know, do the best he can. And so I thought it was fascinating to see it. And, you know, really, Ken Norton Jr. brings up that he's done this before.
Well, I've done it before. There's been the past where Navarro Bowman came in on a Monday and we played him on a Thursday and he started and he had game ball. So we've had this happen before, and you just have to teach him the main thing of certain defenses, really do a great job of getting him in the packages that you feel like play at his strengths. There are some packages that he's in, some that he's not, but the ones that he is in, you really understand the main thing and his main responsibility and how it works with the other guys. And he, like I said, he's a guy that has played football before. He's not a rookie, so he understands the concepts of ball. And to his credit, he was able to play at a high level and represent himself well.
Was pretty good. I mean, he makes the one couple really good plays, and you know, to think, because that's not easy to do. I mean, you come in and you have problems trying to say, okay, so what do we do here? What do we do here? And you have to make those adjustments as quick as possible. And he was able to do that, to his credit. And so I thought that was very encouraging, you know, what he was able to get done and what he was able to do as far as picking up the defense and having a defense that Ken Norton sets up that can, you know, be adaptable. And that's going to be the key to this season, because again, there are going to be injuries. There's going to be opportunities for guys to come in at the last minute and try to help out. So I thought that was one of the more positive things that you could see as far as what he can do. Of course, one of the things that you're not seeing right now, and I think a part of it is, you know, particularly when you think about the unit that they had in Chicago. I mean, three new linebackers to this team. I mean, Austin Calitro at middle linebacker. You know, Barkevious Mingo in his second game as a Seahawk as the strong side linebacker. And then the weak side linebacker being Michael Kendricks with, like, hardly any preparation. You know, the one thing that I think it's taken away from, because the team only has three sacks, is blitzing. I mean, it's going to be very difficult to blitz, you know, until you get everybody on the same page, because yeah, you can have guys blitz, but then guys might get out of position. So I would imagine now that they've had, you know, this short week to be able to prepare, they might be able to do a little bit more against the Dallas Cowboys. But the blitz is something that I know that Bobby Wagner was pushing for, and he'll be back in the lineup, that KJ Wright was pushing for. You can see that they have some blitzing capabilities from the cornerback with Justin Coleman. Those things right now are something that Ken Norton is looking at, and something I think he likes. And so I think that's something that is, you know, on the radar for this team, and on the radar for somebody that I think in Ken Norton Jr., who, you know, come in, I think, you know, since he was here last, I mean, he has been the play caller down in Oakland, and I know that, you know, Bruce Irvin has talked about how much they miss him and how much he was liked down there, and I think you can see that he's grown. I've liked the schemes that he's had so far. I think they've been very encouraging. So I think that Ken Norton Jr. is, you know, somebody to watch. And it's going to be interesting today, coming up Sunday, because I guess it's fitting. Because here's game three. Chris Richard, the former defensive coordinator, is doing things in the secondary and trying to help out the Cowboys defense, going against Ken Norton Jr. We'll see who can get the best of that. Hey, join 710 Sports. ESPN Seattle, and host Dave Wyman for Hawks Live every Thursday at 7 p.m. at Pearl Seafood and Oyster Bar in Bellevue for a preview of this week's game and an in-person player interview. Hawks Live is brought to you by Heritage Distilling's Match Number 12 Vodka, Legendary Donuts, and Pearl Seafood and Oyster Bar. Coming up next, Jeff Schwartz from the Action Network. We're going to talk about what to look forward to this weekend in the NFL. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Jeff Schwartz from the Action Network. And I would imagine that the Action Network has to be buzzing right now, because anytime you have to put out a wild odd, and of course that was coming up and kind of explain what it is, you got a game right now with the Buffalo Bills going on the road. And how many points are they favored to lose by in this game? It's got to be one of those historical ones.
It's 16.5, and I actually don't think it's enough. I bet the Vikings. It's a completely square play, 100% square play. But are you telling me that the Bills, like, let's say the Bills score 10 points.
Right.
Like, the Vikings are going to score 27. They've scored 24 and 29 now. They I assume, feel like they should have won, you know, the game on Saturday, excuse me, Sunday against the Packers. They probably feel a little embarrassed about that. They're going to take their anger on the Bills this weekend. They're going to win this game 34-10.
Mm-hmm. I'm amazed by just how bad the Bills are and how they, because first off, I mean, I don't, you probably agree with me on this. Maybe you don't. There's no way they should have Jeff Allen in a position where he should be the starting quarterback right now. I mean, he's not ready yet. And they did that when they traded away Tyrod Taylor. They did it when they traded away A.J. McCarron. Nathan Peterman right now cannot play in this league and never can. And so now you're with Josh Allen, and it's way too early for him.
Look, John, you took him in the seventh pick overall. I mean, if you wanted to for him to wait, then you should have not taken him that early, or taken someone else, or had a viable option to play instead of him. And they have neither of those. You draft him seventh overall. You don't have an offensive line that's that good right now. And then you couple that with not having a backup quarterback who's viable, whether it's Peterman or McCarron. That's what you get. It's the Bills' fault. They could have brought in anyone this offseason. There are plenty of backup options available to them. So they signed A.J. McCarron, who I don't understand why people are so, you know, like him so much. He's done nothing in the NFL. So you got to play the young kid, I think, and that's why you drafted him.
No doubt, but that's, boy, it's going to be a long season. They only have like 15 players on their roster, 53-man roster currently, that they drafted. You know, Oakland's the other team like that. And in fact, I'm kind of wondering, you know, when you do some of the research on the Action Network and all that stuff, what do you do with a team like the Raiders? Because I think there's a predictability to what they do, and I don't know if you can put it in the odds, but they're going to fade in the second half because, you know, they don't have a pass rush, and they just, in the last two games, they fade. They get off to good starts, but they fade. What do you do with a team like the Raiders?
Well, I really like the Dolphins here. I liked them when the line first came out. I think it's at 3 now. Went back down to 3. Let me just make sure. 3 is much better than 3.5. The Dolphins are 2-0, by the way. I mean, I think we're just forgetting that they're 2-0. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because they played some good football. And, you know, it's tough to remember this. In 2016, they were a playoff team with Ryan Tannehill. Now, he got hurt at the end of the year, so Matt Moore had to play the playoffs. Remember, they were a playoff team with Ryan Tannehill, and he has played well with Gase as his coordinator. So, you know, we have to remember that when we look at the Dolphins. Right now, they're 3-point favorites. Which I think is a great number, a great number for them. I don't see the Raiders going out east after the game they played the other night in Denver and going out and putting a bunch of a fight.
Curiously, scoring is up in the NFL, you know, by at least a couple points a game per team. I mean, 47 points total, where last year it was like about 42, 43 in the first 2 weeks of the season. What adjustments does that make as far, and what are you observing just by watching tape? I mean, I know part of this has to be, you know, all the goofy rules that they have right now that limit the defensive players. I mean, the Clay Matthews call was a travesty.
Yeah.
And now they've come back and they said, oh, we're going to uphold that. We're going to put that in the tape so we can, you know, now the burping of the quarterback is now going to be a 15-yard penalty. And so what are you noticing as far as the trend on offensive scoring?
Well, a couple of things. One, I think with less and less teams taking the preseason seriously, we just have a lot of teams that I think are unprepared when they get to the preseason, especially on defense. And you have these offensive minds now, these quarterbacks, these coordinators that can really scheme up some great things early in the season. We're seeing that a lot of the plays. I do think that your point with the penalties, man, I mean, it's hard to quantify, I think, how many points per game these are adding. But, you know, you talk about the Packers game, right? They don't call that play. The Packers probably win. Instead, you add 7 points to that game now. So we're seeing a lot of points added to games because of these penalties.
No doubt. And of course that makes, I guess, you know, gets the over going. What other trends have you noticed, you know, just as far as on the Action Network, as far as what's out there as far as the week one and week two?
You know, I think we've seen that, you know, the Browns, for example, I've been covering. I mean, look, it's not been pretty, but they've covered now 2 weeks in a row. Tonight they're favored. They're under Hugh Jackson. They're 10-24 against the spread in 34 games. The first time they've been favored under Hugh Jackson. I can't buy them tonight. I've never I'll take the under tonight at 41. It keeps going up, which is fantastic because you have two teams. If you look at their efficiency ratings, the Jets are second in defense, the Browns are sixth, and then offensively, the Jets are 27th, and the Browns are 30th. Like, there's no reason to be at all that would point to you to where there'll be points, a lot of points scored in this game. So I'm excited to watch it. I love watching all football. I'll be up late watching this game on the East Coast, but I don't see how many points are scored.
Yeah, so you're not going with the Browns tonight? Because I'm looking at this game and I'm thinking, okay, here's Sam Darnold with three games in 11 days, a short week, a rookie quarterback, the youngest rookie quarterback since the merger to get a start like this. And that's a lot to ask of him against, a Greg Williams defense that can be pretty decent.
Yeah. I can't do it, man. I can't bet on the Browns. I'm not going to do it. I think ideally, if you were to bet on someone, you would bet on the Browns. But I personally am not doing it. That's why I'll play the under in this game.
See, now you hit me because I'm always constantly just saying negative things about the Browns. I just can't stop.
So am I.
Yeah,
they're
it's like
poorly coached.
Well, I guess maybe it's because they've only won one game in 3 years. Maybe that could be the reason. And then you look at some of the decisions, even now that they're making. They get rid of Josh Gordon in the minute after he has a hamstring injury in a photo shoot. Their sideline reporter ends up getting an 8-game suspension for arguing with the officials. Then they take Michael Kendricks, who was actually
who's their sideline reporter?
He's the guy who does the podcast and all that stuff, and does Browns Live. And so their sideline reporter. Yeah, he gets an 8-game suspension, or at least he's not allowed to do sidelines for 8 games. That's not good.
That's amazing.
It's a constant thing. They let Michael Kendricks go. Kendricks ends up, now again, we realize the insider trading thing and all that stuff. He was actually challenging Jamie Collins for a starting job, and what ends up happening? He comes out here to Seattle, and he plays pretty well.
Yeah, to me, they just don't seem to have a plan very often. Like, we've seen these two games now. They could be 2-0 if Tyrod Taylor was their quarterback. Now, if Baker Mayfield was their quarterback. And look, you can say that Tyrod kept him in the game. I mean, yeah, he threw that fourth and five pass. I mean, the Saints played terrible defense on that. They didn't learn their lesson, obviously, from the Minneapolis Miracle. And then, week one, the Steelers turned the ball over 6 times and the Browns still can't win that game. What I don't understand with the way they're handling Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield is the reason you played Tyrod was to win your football games. It hasn't worked yet. You haven't won your football games. He's not the future of your franchise. He's not doing it. He was 15 of 40 in week one passing the ball. Put in Baker Mayfield. Let him learn. Let him grow. You have a really good defense. Your offensive line is fine. You have all these weapons around you. You're wasting your time playing Tyrod Taylor. He's supposed to be playing to buy Hugh Jackson time, and it's not working. You're not winning. Put in Baker Mayfield.
Hey, I know you studied the Cowboys' defensive line and studied what they're doing for pressure. What are you noticing about that, and how does that match up against Seattle on Sunday?
Well, Dallas has always done this with Marinelli. A lot of cover two teams that play a lot of cover two do this. They move a lot up front. They do a lot of line games. And look, they have one guy in DeMarcus Lawrence who can beat you one-on-one. So when that happens, you have to move a lot up front. And so the Cowboys, I thought, did a good job of a couple of times teaming up the Giants and getting themselves some free runs at Eli. Their defense has done a little bit of more pressure this year, in my opinion, than they have in the past as far as designer pressures per the league. And look, Seattle's offensive line, it's interesting. They posted, I saw, I think it was Brian Baldinger posted some videos of Cleo Mack. And it wasn't that Effetti was playing bad, the right tackle. It was just he just was not taking like great sets, and it's hard to. I know that might sound like he's playing bad, but Khalil Mack is lining up so wide, and just Effetti was just drifting into Russell Wilson. It wasn't if he just took a stand where he was, I think he would have been fine. So I mean, at times it's overblown, the Seahawks' offensive line issues, but they're not running the ball very well. They do the same thing I feel like all the time. It's the same way the Lions do it, right? Is you get down early and then you just go to 2-minute drill, and Russell Wilson runs around the place and makes a bunch of throws, and you get closer, you win football games. Like I just them and the Lions have the same MO in my opinion every single game.
Hey, so what's on the Action Network, and what can everybody get on it?
Yes, you can go to the Action Network app. It's a fantastic app. It's just to even track scores. You don't even have to gamble on there. You can track your wagers, of course. It's fantastic. They have a predictive tool, so you know if you bet a game and you can see where you are in the game, are you in the red, are you in the green? And one thing I think is great, John, is they have a clock during halftime that tells you how much time you have till the game starts again. So we know that, you know, NFL halftimes are very quick, you know, to 15 minutes, maybe closer to 12, but college halftimes are long. And so this has a clock on there that tells you exactly when the game's going to start so you can get back in front of your television.
Fantastic. Hey, Jeff, as always, great to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Take care.
Jeff Schwartz joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. All right, coming back, we'll get back into the National Football League and continue to look at things behind the line. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And we go behind the lines each day to kind of get you caught up on the National Football League and what's going on. And, of course, injury is a big part of it. And we've got kind of interesting, some big news out of Tampa Bay. Vita Bea is back on the field for the first time since the beginning of camp. Now, remember, the former UW first-round pick ended up having a calf injury, and they didn't want to put him on IR. They wanted to wait it out, and they waited, and they waited, and they waited. And so, finally, he's able to go out there today for the first time. So there's a chance he may be able to play. Brett Grimes, the cornerback who's missed a couple games, he's also out there, so it looks like they're getting a little bit healthier. But speaking of bad health, boy, the Atlanta Falcons. Now, remember, they've been a team over the last 2-3 years that have been the least injured. How about in the first 2 weeks? You know, Keanu Neal, their safety, he's out with an ACL injury. Then Deion Jones, their best middle linebacker, and a guy who was one of the better young middle linebackers in the league, their Bobby Wagner, he gets a foot injury and he goes on IR. Andy LaVitra, the guard, he had to have a problem with a triceps injury, so he's down for the season. So you put all that together, you got Devontae Freeman out with a knee injury. They're really banged up. Julio Jones missed practice yesterday with a calf injury. You know, Tack McKinley, their defensive end, first-round pick from a year ago, he's missing practice with a groin injury. All of a sudden, one of the healthiest teams in the league, a team that when they were lining up and doing the first week of practice didn't have anybody on the injury list, they are losing major, major talent and major players. And so we'll see how that affects them. Of course, it was interesting that they were taking on a Carolina Panther team that was missing three starters on the offensive line. You know, they're two starting tackles, Matt Khalil, who had a knee injury, then their right tackle, he was out, and then, of course, their best offensive lineman, Trey Turner. Turner had a concussion, so he missed the game, and he may have to miss another game. You know, Darrell Williams is the right tackle, who was pretty good. In fact, he was up for a contract. He had a patellar injury, and then, of course, he came back a little bit too soon, and then you throw in the fact that Greg Olsen, their great tight end, he's got a foot injury, and so he's going to miss some times. Of course, I guess there's no sympathy here in Seattle, because look at the injuries they've had. K.J. Wright missing at the first two games. Bobby Wagner missing a game. Trey Flowers, who gets the starting job in week one, he misses a game with a hamstring injury. Five starters missing the Monday night game against the Chicago Bears. I guess they are getting some guys back. You know, D.J. Fluker is going to be back. He's at least practiced full yesterday. But then you throw the problems now on the offensive line. Justin Britt, mixed reviews whether he's going to be able to go on that shoulder injury. Didn't practice yesterday. I think there's a skepticism about his chances of playing, but we don't know for sure. And then we don't know about Ethan Posick, because Posick had an ankle injury. And I'm trying to remember, because you see so much when you're on the sidelines. I remember the one part where he did get kind of banged up, and he fought through it. And you know he's tough enough to try to fight through it. And you can get offensive linemen with ankle injuries. I mean, hey, go back to last year. You know, Dwayne Brown played with a high ankle sprain and did a good job. You know, it affected some of his mobility. But some of the, you know, if you have an ankle injury, somehow you're able to fight through it. We'll see what Posick's going to do, but also they don't want to risk it, so it's going to be something that it could be a lingering type of injury. But
John, he was reportedly in a boot yesterday. How often do you see a guy in a walking boot that ends up playing that week?
I mean, it happens. I mean, because you put the boot on to kind of just give you a little bit more protection and don't have much going back and forth. I still remember Ben Roethlisberger, you know, going in and getting a boot because he thought his ankle was bothering him, and it wasn't. The trainers and doctors looked at the ankle. It was perfectly fine, but he wore a boot. So, again, sometimes you do it just for protection. But, you know, clearly it's a tough one because, again, you don't know the type of ankle injury. Was it rolled? Is it a high ankle sprain? What is it? I'm not going to speculate because I simply don't know. But it happens. I mean, guys have been able to come back and, you know, have the boot on. Because remember, it's still Wednesday. If the boot was on, you know, you have to still get ready for Sunday. So there's still time to be able to do it. And again, you have the boot there for protection. So injury is still a big part of it. And some of the teams in the NFC are really banged up right now. Hey, what do you think, Maura, of the Sunday game, Minnesota against Green Bay, which I think was one of the most defining games of the year? And so what ends up happening in that game, they get the tie, you know, they cut the kicker. And apparently after the game, it was 29-29, the final score in overtime. And you got Mike Zimmer, the wild coach, texting Rick Spielman, the general manager, and basically saying, get me some players. Get me some players.
Wow.
We got to get some players. And, you know, it's 29-29 on the road against Green Bay, a game that they should have won if the kicker makes one of the field goals, but they didn't. And, of course, they should have lost the game because of that Clay Matthews play, which, you know, took away an interception that Kirk Cousins threw. So what do they end up doing? They go get Tom Johnson for the defensive line. They'll go get Dan Bailey as a kicker. Aldrick Robinson comes in because two of their younger wide receivers aren't doing a good job. They cut their seventh-round pick from last year, and one of the other guys, Laquon Treadwell, is off to a very horrible start. And so, you know, Mike Zimmer, team that has, he has a coach that has seven Pro Bowl guys on defense. He's got Kirk Cousins, you know, at $28 million a year, two Pro Bowl wide receivers, a Pro Bowl tight end, and he needs more players. How about that? It's like almost like Lou Piniella.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at it, they were down 20-7. Kirk Cousins wasn't playing well really early on, and he led them back. That's almost an Aaron Rodgers-esque comeback from the week before against the Bears.
Right. I mean, but that was I thought that was pretty wild in the sense that it's like, here's Mike Zimmer. Get me more players. I don't have enough players.
Yeah. I saw after they cut Carlson and the way he approached it at the press conference, he doesn't mess around.
Oh, no. Again, I was on the sidelines for the Seahawks game, and I swear that he wanted to cut Daniel Carlson then. In the preseason game. And this is a fifth-round pick that he actually traded up to try to get. And he wanted to get rid of him as fast as he possibly could because, you know, he is very impatient. He's a good coach, but he can drive you crazy. I know that, you know, Carlson has a lot of talent, but then so does Blair Walsh. Oh, and by the way, did you see the guy that they did bring in before they signed Dan Bailey?
No.
I know one team was looking at Blair Walsh. I'm trying to remember who it was, but they weren't going to bring Blair Walsh back to Minnesota. Could you imagine Zimmer if you give him Blair Walsh?
Yeah.
That would not go over very
well. I don't think so, no.
No. As far as some other teams with some injury issues, the Colts right now are pretty banged up. Eight guys did not practice yesterday, and that includes Anthony Castano, their left tackle. Clayton Gathers, their safety, who's had injuries. You know, they didn't have T.Y. Hilton out there. Marlon Mack now has a foot injury to go with the hamstring injury. And then they had two other guys. So 10 guys didn't – well, eight guys didn't practice, and then two were just limited. And so they are in a bad state. And then Philadelphia continues to have their problems with injuries. You know, Jay Ajayi, he didn't practice because of a back injury. You know, they've got Darren Sproles right now bothered by some hamstring issues. Alshon Jeffery looks like he's going to need another week. You had to get Jordan Matthews and bring him back because they had put Mike Wallace on the injured reserve list. So again, injuries are such a big key, and injuries are something that, of course, we'll continue to update into tomorrow because tomorrow, of course, is injury day when everybody has to designate who's going to be out there. All right, so what we want to do is that injuries are bouncing up and stacking up early for the Seahawks. Which injury concerns you the most? We're going to take some calls because they may be able to take many calls this week, and we want to hear what you think. You know, and what does a team to do to get back on track? Give us a call at 866-979-3776, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. Your thoughts on what this team needs to do coming up to get back on track. They're 0-2. They're 0-8, I guess, in the Pete Carroll era in September on the road. So what concerns you the most? Give us a call. 866-979-3776, 206-421-3776. Check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Action Deal. Acura dealer. Coming up next, your phone calls. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.